Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Tuesday to you. I'm Jim Rome. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So let me ask you something. After having no football for so long, what's it been like to have so much football the last couple of days? It's been amazing, right? And there's more where that came from. Already we're on the clock for a Thursday night matchup. 1-800-636-8686. The clock! There was a doubleheader last night. And you probably got a whole lot of football in you on Sunday. So lots to cover, lots to get done. You've got your telephone number. Hit me up on social media at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The show sets up like this. I've got former NFLer and CBS Sports NFL studio analyst London Fletcher coming up next segment. Then we are wide open until 10:40 Pacific time. At that point, we talked to head football coach Billy Napier from Louisiana. In hour number three, in fact, we'll go back-to-back with those two interviews, the WBC light middleweight champ, Jermell Charlo. So those are your three interviews. Lots of opportunities to get through. You've got your telephone number. You can hit me up on Twitter. We always read tweets. Best tweets get retweeted. At Jim Rome. Same thing with Instagram. What do you want to hit on? All right, let me start with last night's game. Actually, a doubleheader last night, but I want to start with the Steelers and the Giants. Now, they did face each other in the first game of that doubleheader, and there were a couple of questions going into the game. Number one, exactly how is Ben Roethlisberger going to look in return from elbow surgery? Number two, another pressing question. What the hell are the Giants doing on national TV? Again? I mean, seriously, does anybody anywhere want to see these guys? They've had one winning season since 2012, yet every single year they get rolled out on national television as if anyone anywhere wants to see them. And no one does. They've been the worst team in the NFL over the past 3 years. It's a fact. Look it up. They've got the worst record in the league over the last 3 years. So they're bad. Like, really bad. How bad? Cleveland went 0-16 during that stretch, and the Giants are still worse. They're that bad. So what the hell are they doing on my TV? And sure enough, they did exactly what you'd expect the Giants to do if you put them on TV. But let me talk about Roethlisberger first. Now, in the build-up to that game, he talked about the jitters. He talked about the nerves in returning after last season ended for him in week two. But the guy had nothing to worry about. Number one, he looked good. Number two, he was playing the Giants. So he finishes 21 of 32, 229 yards, three TDs. Benny Snell Jr. runs wild when James Conner goes out, and the Steelers' offense looked pretty sharp. And nobody is happier about that than Juju Smith-Schuster. Remember last year when his numbers fell off a cliff and then all of a sudden people started to doubt him? Well, he was back last night. He was back to his old ways. There was this TD.
One in the play clock. Roethlisberger back. Here come the Giants. Roethlisberger floats for Juju Smith-Schuster. Touchdown, Steelers. A touch pass and a beauty by Roethlisberger. And Juju Smith-Schuster has the touchdown for the Steelers.
Steelers radio, and if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see the TD was nice, but the TD dance was even better. My guy broke out the Who's Next dance, which is such a legendary move and a reminder of how funny this guy really is. Not so funny last year, but he is funny. He's funny when he's having fun, and he's back to having fun. And to the question of who's next, last night the answer was James Washington. If Steeler fans were looking for a sign of Ben being back, it came in how he executed the two-minute drill before halftime. That's how you knew that Ben was back. Actually, it was about 85 seconds worth of that drill, and it was capped off by this completely absurd catch and run and finish by Washington.
On an empty set, Roethlisberger back, throws underneath, complete. This is James Washington, leaps, and James Washington powers into the end zone. Wow. Touchdown, wow. Steelers.
He was physical. He ran the guy over.
This guy had no business getting into the end zone on that play. except he made it his business to get into the end zone on that play. He caught the ball at the 10. He had a couple of Giants in front of him. He had one coming from behind, and he took them all on, refused to go down, was not going to be denied. An incredible moment for the Steelers and extremely humiliating for the Giants. I wish I could say that was the only embarrassing moment for the Giants, but you know that's not the case. It never is with the Giants, and this is why it's hard to figure out exactly how good the Steelers were last night. How good they are coming out of last night. I mean, are they that good, or are the Giants just that bad? And as always, the answer is yes. They did look good. Ben needed a bit of time to knock off some of that rust, but for a guy coming back from serious elbow surgery, he threw it pretty well. The line did get banged up. Connor did go down with an injury, but Snell Jr. stepped up with 19 carries for 113 yards. Juju had a couple of TDs, which nearly tied his output for all of last year. He had that critical fumble recovery, and he was back to being himself, back to celebrating, back to having fun. And yes, the defense did look dominant. But again, that defense was great last year. Roethlisberger said that that might be the best defense that they've had since he's been there. I mean, maybe. Maybe. That's saying a lot. But who am I to say that he's not right? Who am I to say Ben is wrong? But I am the guy to say that that unit did it against the Giants. So until we see it against an actual NFL team, maybe you hold off the best you've ever been around platitudes, big dude. I mean, yes, I'll give you this. They did completely shut down Saquon Barkley. Yes, the defense did look good. But if you look good against the Giants, does it even really count? Not really. Not until I see that against somebody who matters, because the Giants still don't. The only ones who matter less than the Giants are the Jets. Now, if that sounds like I'm being harsh, or if that sounds like I'm being unfair to the Giants, I would argue the Giants are being unfair to everybody else who had to watch that game, because they're just not good.
Not good.
Below not good.
Below not good.
Hey, remember last year when everybody was looking to crown Daniel Jones after his first NFL game last year? You remember that, right? You know, the Danny Dimes mania. You remember, right? I know I do. It was a stretch at that time, and now it seems even more whack right now, especially when you see some of what he did last night. Now, there was some good, like this TD to Darius Slayton.
Jones in a play fake. Deep ball down the middle of the field, looking for his receiver, and he's got him for the touchdown. Darius Slayton on the post, and the Giants get their first touchdown of 2020. It's a 41-yard strike. Jones to Slayton.
So that's Giants radio, and at that point, the Danny Dimes Nation was coming out all over again. Problem is, Danny Dimes often rolls with his broham, Danny Turnovers. And DT was definitely in the building last night. There was this pick.
Jones under center as Barkley is the lone setback. Jones back is going to throw underneath, and it's intercepted. What a play by TJ Watt. Boy, he read Jones's eyes, dropped back, and picked it off. A huge play coming by TJ Watt.
It was that. So maybe you want to give Jones a break on that, because that was a hell of a play by Watt. Except you cannot excuse him or give him a break on the next one. On New York's first drive of the second half, the Giants get the ball on their own 9. They put together a monster drive. 18 plays all the way down to the Steeler 4. And on the 19th play of that drive, 2nd and 3 from the Steeler 4, D Turnovers did this.
Jones rolling out now under pressure, looking, going to float one up, and it is going to be picked off by Cam Hayward right at the goal line. So Cam Hayward, the hit in the backfield, the ball flutters in the air. It's going to be a touchback as Hayward comes up with the interception for the Steelers.
What was that? Seriously, what was that? What was that play call? To have this guy roll to his left and then throw? And what was that decision? Just throw it up in the air? Just throw it up for grabs down the goal line? Cam Hayward picks it off, but any one of 5 Steelers were in position to get that pick. If Cam decided that he didn't want it or wanted to share it with one of his guys, there were 4 other guys in white jerseys who could have grabbed that, and no Giant had a chance. That's the Danny Turnovers that we know and love. Back-breaking turnovers when you can least afford it. That's their brand. And let's be clear, those were not INTs made by athletic cornerbacks breaking on the ball or fighting off a receiver. Those were two picks by D linemen. I know what you're thinking. If your quarterback is still a turnover factory, why don't you just hand the ball to your Pro Bowl running back? Yeah, well, they tried that. That didn't work too well. Saquon Barkley, 15 carries, 6 yards. All right? That's not 15 carries averaging 6 per carry. That's not 15 carries averaging 6 yards. That's 15 carries for 6 total yards. His longest run of the night was 7 yards. If you take that away, he had 14 carries for a negative yard. At one point in the first half, he had 8 carries for minus 8 yards. He was hit behind the line of scrimmage on 11 of his 15 carries. And we're talking about Saquon Barkley. We're not talking about some clown off the street. This is one of the best running backs in the game. This is their best football player. And he averaged less than a half yard per carry. So now you've got some credit that goes to the Steeler D, but come on, New York. Come on, New York. I thought this was supposed to be the new look New York Giants with Joe Judge. You know, Joe Judge bringing his wacky approach to practice and the genius Jason Garrett dialing up plays. Instead, what you got in the first quarter was a delay of game penalty on 4th-and-1 from their own 40, only managing a field goal after getting the ball on the Steeler 3 and settling for a kick on 4th-and-2. And a lot of post-game spin that Jones really wasn't that bad, that there really was a lot to like about his performance. Yeah, I guess. Maybe. Whatever the hell works for you. Just know that none of that is working for anybody else. And know this, too. If you lose by double digits at home and your alleged phenomic quarterback throws two picks to D linemen and your takeaway is that overall it's not that bad of a night, then you really are that bad of a team. And you're essentially looking up at everybody not named the Jets after week one. I mean, do better. Because being slightly less embarrassing than the Jets is not nearly good enough. Not nearly good enough. 1-800-636-8686. I've got London Fletcher coming up in a few minutes. But before I do that, some quick reaction. Romy, what are the Giants doing on national television? I didn't even realize they were on. I got grounded from the television, and I got my mouth washed out with soap for talking back to my parents. Regards, Eli Manning. I got a question. Is that a figure of speech, or do people really get their mouth washed out with soap? Your mom or your dad, when you were growing up, ever grab you by the tongue and yank and then rub a bar of lava over it? Dear Jim, I absolutely loved the Broncos' late-game strategy last night. Regards, Rich Kotite. Paul in Louisville. Yeah, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. Yo, Victor. Exactly what are you holding on to those timeouts for? Hey, Rome. I'm glad to have football back, too. But did we have to get the Broncos-Titans on a Monday night? I would have rather listened to another Brady-Gronk friendship test. No, you wouldn't. All right, so if I were to say to you, think of the cringiest thing you can. It's still not that cringy. I mean, I don't even know that I can run that back. That was such a hard thing to listen to the first time. Rome Slice. It's National Double Cheeseburger Day. I can't hear you. There's too much money in my bleeping hand. Regards, Five Guys cashier.
I can't hear you.
I can't hear you.
There's too much money in my hand.
I can't hear you.
Just answer it or not. I'll call you back.
Geoff and Lincoln. A lot of things about this show in terms of threads that I do not get, that's one of them. I mean, I'm not saying that Five Guys is not expensive. I don't go there, so I really didn't know. But for whatever reason, that's just one that you will not let go of. That they've got overpriced burgers. All right, still ahead. I want to talk some baseball. Yes, I said it. I want to mix some baseball in. Dodgers, Padres. Man, that thing is setting up beautifully, isn't it? It's getting deeply personal, deeply chippy. The Padres are not taking a step back. They're not afraid. They're not intimidated. And it's getting chippy. It's nice. I want to talk AQI. Do you know what that means? We're talking weather, and there's an important reason for that. And I will get into that later on. 1-800-636-8686. And you know I'm going to get into Game 7. Clippers, Nugs. Clippers are absolutely freaking skating on this show. Had there not been week 1 of the NFL, it would have been all Clipper talk yesterday, and none of it good for them. Tell you what else is not getting enough credit, good. Man. The Nuggets. How about the Nuggets? And although you don't want to talk about it, I will talk Titans, Broncos. We're talking kickers. How about missing 4 kicks in 1 game and still winning? All of that is still ahead, but when we come back, London Fletcher joins me. So I've got a question for you first. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? First off, there's something to be said about a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky, and it is that. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality through their iconic clear view packages. You see exactly what you're buying. And every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the finest ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to the real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in 4 amazing flavors. Old Fashioned has a hint of brown sugar sweetness, teriyaki, peppered. And for those of you who need a little more zing, there's Hot and Spicy. Chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and provide real sustained energy. It's a better way to snack. Make Old Trapper part of your weekly grocery list. Keep a good supply on hand for you and your family. If you don't see it, ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You want to be a part of this or not? You got to play your way in. You know this, right? You have your telephone number. It is toll free. You have to play your way in. If you make it better, I'm going to put you up. If not, I'm going to keep moving. Now, this guy is going to make it better. Always does. He is a Super Bowl champion. He is a 4-time Pro Bowler, a 16-year NFL vet, a member of the Washington football team Ring of Fame. He was undrafted out of John Carroll University. He is an analyst for Topps on CBS Sports Network. He is an analyst for the Washington football team's postgame show. He is London Fletcher. London, good to have you on. Before we get into everything, let me first ask you, how are you doing, and how is everybody around you doing during this pandemic, London?
Hey, Jim, we're doing great, man. Just, adjusting to what society, has right now. I think it's difficult times for everybody, but, we're making the most of the situation. My kids are back in school somewhat. My older two, they're doing a hybrid situation, half virtual, half in school, and then my youngest, she goes every day. So it's some adjustments.
I know that life, London. I know the hybrid situation. We've got a couple in school as well, so I understand that really well. Listen, what was it like to get the season started again on Topps on Sunday? How did that go?
Oh, it went phenomenal. We added Kyle Long to the crew this year, and I thought, man, it was, the best show ever. We had a great chemistry, just a phenomenal show. Deb Gelman, our producer, she put together a really phenomenal rundown, and Adam Schein, he's the best. He's the maestro. He controls everything. We got to talk about football. We talked about the social injustices that are taking place. We talked about the protests. I mean, we talked about everything, but it was a great first show.
It's a great show. It's a great show with a great crew. London Fletcher is joining us. I was going to ask you about Kyle Long, who's a tremendous guy. You and he were talking on Topps, and he was talking about how special Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are, which is true. And then you hit him with, and the Bears picked who? Which made me laugh. Like, when Watson and Mahomes are picked behind him, exactly how does Mitchell Trubisky ever get over that?
The only way he gets over it is if he plays like he played in you know, the fourth quarter against Detroit. If he does that, you know, maybe another 15 times in his career, he ends up being a Bears longtime quarterback, and he has to win a Super Bowl. But, you know, he's going to be judged by those guys, or judged against those guys, because they were drafted after him. So that's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, I didn't see that happening. I mean, credit to him for coming back on Detroit the way he did, but he's going to have to do that a whole lot of times before anybody forgets that those guys were taken after him. London Fletcher is my guest. London, as I mentioned off the top, you are the postgame analyst for Washington this year. There has been a ton of change in the organization over the offseason. As a former member of that team, what was it like for you to watch all of that unfold?
You know, when I played for the Burgundy and Gold, you know, for the Redskins, I wanted to represent the franchise, the former players, Mr. Snyder, the owner, my teammates. I always wanted to represent that organization to the best of my ability. I took pride in coming out and playing for the fans each and every Sunday. When the changes took place, starting with the name, you know, I thought it was necessary. You know, here I am as an African American man wanting social equality for us as a people of color, and then if the Native Americans didn't view the Redskins name as a you know, honoring them, then you know, who am I to, you know, want to hold on to something that they didn't feel like was an honor? So I applaud Mr. Snyder and his wife Tanya for you know, making the change and making a lot of changes. I thought the hiring of Jason Wright as the new team president, I think that's a phenomenal move. And even if you go back and look, think about even before the name change, the hiring of Ron Rivera as the head coach, that was a home run hit. So a lot of changes have taken place. I think the organization and the franchise is in a, you know, headed in the right direction. I'm really excited for the future and, you know, what the Washington football team has in its future.
London Fletcher is joining us here in the jungle. London, when you look back on your time there, like, culture and leadership are words that get thrown around all the time, but you're a guy who made an impact in every locker room that you ever stepped in. As an example, your teammate in Washington, Santana Moss, has said that he changed how he approached the game because he watched you. What was your approach to the game, and how aware were you that guys on offense were noticing and modeling themselves after you?
You know, I was not aware of it. I think, you know, it was one of the things where I really took a great deal of pride in just my approach to the game. So I just went about, you know, my business on a day in and day out basis, just trying to be the best player that I can be, not just for myself, but for my teammates in the franchise that I represented. You know, Santana, for him to say that, you know, I appreciated that. And that's just, I think it's one thing if you're a leader to kind of talk the talk, but you have to walk the walk. And guys respect you for what you do more so than what you say.
We're talking to London Fletcher. London, you mentioned Ron Rivera. Last month he announced that he had been diagnosed with cancer. What was your reaction to that, and how he has continued to coach throughout the whole process?
You know, it was it hit home for me for a couple of reasons, and I shared this recently on Tops. My wife, she's actually battling breast cancer currently, and so I know what Ron's up against and what he's facing, and then you know, how he's going to be dealing with it. It's a tough situation anytime you're dealing with cancer. The treatments that he's going to have to go through and he's going through currently is going to be an extremely difficult process for him, and then he's going to be coaching football, and I know the grind that those coaches go through, and so it's a big challenge. But you know, he has a tremendous support system: his wife, the organization, his players, his assistant coaches, the entire organization. You know, is behind him and supporting him. But it's there are going to be some times where he's you know, he's already mentioned how his energy level is not you know, not great sometimes, and that's one of the things that my wife definitely dealt with when she went through the chemo. Just you know, just the energy level and things like that.
No doubt. London Fletcher is joining us, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. Listen, before you go, when you consider everything that has taken place with that organization, it would have been very understandable if the team struggled on Sunday against Philadelphia, especially when they fell behind 17-0. So what did you make of the way they all responded after trailing by 17 and the way they came back?
You know, when they fell behind 17-0, I was like, man, what the heck? You know, this is not a good thing. Is, you know, here we go again. But what I love was the team takes on the identity of your head coach. And I don't care what sport you play, what sport, it's all, that's how it is. And if you think about Ron Rivera, and we're talking about him and how tough he is, how resilient he is, he doesn't blink. I live in Charlotte. I've known Ron. I've watched his Panthers team. He's not going to blink. He's not going to make excuses. And that's how that team performed on Sunday. No panic. Team was down. Then, you know, somebody made a play. Fabian Moreau, he makes the interception. The next thing you know, it's 27 unanswered points. But it started because of the leader that Coach Rivera is. If you don't have him as a leader, they don't win that ball game. You know, it might be a 30-point loss for the team, you know, without Coach Rivera. But that's a total reflection of him and how resilient he is, how tough he is, and how steady he is as a leader.
So, London, one last thought. Speaking of tough, the defense had 8 sacks, so I know you had to be impressed by that. On the flip side, though, Carson Wentz took an absolute beating in that game. We know that Philadelphia's got a lot of issues on that offensive line. But if you're Philadelphia, how concerned are you when you see your franchise quarterback and a guy who's dealt with injuries in the past get hit that many times?
You know, they should be very concerned. I said, you know, they had a Zoom meeting at Carson Wentz the other day. Oh, I say they had a meeting at Carson Wentz, and it was not a Zoom meeting. Right. You know, there was no social distancing taking place with Washington's defensive line. You know, you gotta understand that the Eagles, they had a situation where Lane Johnson, he was a late scratch. He's dealing with some injuries. Jason Peters was signed to replace their starting right guard. He had to flip over to left tackle because of an injury to Andre Dillard. So that unit, even going into the game, I think they only had about three or four practices together as a unit prior to going into that ball game. Then Lane Johnson was a late scratch. So, you know, the main thing is trying to get healthy, especially at the right tackle position. They got to get Lane back. He's one of the best right tackles in football. If they don't get healthy, it could be a long year, because we know Carson has a ton of injury history, and he won't survive 16 games if he takes that type of beating on a weekend and week out basis.
Right. How about one last thing? I've got to own this. Like, I've been on the Browns bandwagon for a while right now, and things are not going so well. Then they bring in Kevin Stefanski, and the hope was he would maximize the talent that they have. Then they go out and they get hammered by Baltimore in the season opener. So you've got a new head coach. You've got plenty of hope. How tough is it then? I mean, one thing to lose, but to go out and get beaten the way they were, how tough is that for them? And how important is it for them to bounce back right away?
It's extremely tough. I'm from Cleveland. I know all about the history of the Browns. I went back and I looked at the game and I saw, you know, some of the things and how Baker, he didn't look great. So there's some concern there. You know, Kevin Stefanski was brought in to get the best out of Baker. Him and Odell Beckham Jr., they were not able to connect on some of the throws down the field. Baker had some accuracy issues. So those things are concerning. Now they have to improve and improve quickly, because they played Thursday night against the Cincinnati Bengals. I will say this: it's early, and you have a new head coach, you have a new offensive system, you have a new defensive system. This wasn't your typical off season in terms of the amount of work you were able to do in off season. No preseason game, so I'm not going to panic just yet, but they must, over the next, I would say, 4 ball games, they have to show some improvement. Otherwise, that fan base is going to start to clamor, and things could get kind of ugly.
That is a good conversation right there. A 16-year NFL vet, a Super Bowl champion, an analyst for Tops on CBS Sports Network, which is a great show, and an analyst for the Washington football team's postgame show. And do not forget, a member of the Washington football team Ring of Fame. London, appreciate you. Appreciate you coming on the show. Great to have you back, London. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks for having me.
London Fletcher. London always came on the program when he played. What a great player he was. Great analyst, too. 1-800-636-8686. The Washington football team has got some guys who can get after the quarterback now. They've got pass rushers for days. Jonathan Allen, Chase Young, Ryan Kerrigan, Montez Sweat. They've got lots of guys who can wreak a lot of havoc in the backfield. Great comeback. And I have to admit, when they were down 17-0, I thought, man, this is a really bad football team. And then they showed tremendous heart, tremendous grit in coming back the way they did. And Philadelphia better do something on that offensive line. I understand that they've got holes and issues, but they're going to get their quarterback maimed. All right, so we are open now until 10:40 Pacific time, meaning we are wide open. I started to think for a minute. It's a what's your beef day. No, it's not. That's tomorrow. I'm kind of hardwired for it. Hawk, you were sweating that, weren't you? Padres, Dodgers. I love the way that series got off to a start. Let's talk about that. Billy Napier coming up next hour. Jermell Charlo is the WBC light middleweight champ. He comes up in hour number three. Before I do anything else, though, I've got a sports update for you.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Sunday, it's an NFL on CBS doubleheader. The early games highlighted by an NFC matchup between the Giants and the Bears. And you've got the Broncos squaring off the Steelers. And in game two, Patrick Mahomes and the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs take on the Chargers. Or you have the Ravens taking on the Texans. It all starts with JB and the fellas on the NFL Today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, Sunday on CBS. And I am making my first appearance of the season. And I am doing so here in Cali. I will be socially distanced. Not just from 6 feet, but 3,000 miles. So we've never done that before. This shiny studio that they built for me here in Cali. I'm going to do my hit from our studio here in California. So I'm fired up about that. Been communicating with the man, Drew Kalisky, about my topics. And I'm really excited about that. So make sure you check that out. Noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. I will do a hit from this studio. All right, so let me change up on you really quickly and talk some baseball. I think for a lot of you, it might feel like, well, two things. Why are you talking baseball during NFL season and the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs? Why are you talking baseball? And then moreover, why are you talking, quote, regional baseball? Padres, Dodgers. Man, because I'll tell you why. We're talking about the most exciting team, the hottest team in baseball right now, the Padres, going up against the best team in baseball right now, the Dodgers, and they're playing for the division, and it's really chippy. And we're coming down to the last 10 games of a wild, wild year. That's why. I shouldn't have to say so. Let me put it to you another way. Like, if you've ever been to a music festival, then you know how there are multiple bands. They play at the same time, but on different stages, right? So the headliners get the real estate. The artists who were printed up in the smaller font on the flyer are somewhere off to the side playing to a smaller crowd. But if you've ever been to a music festival, you know that the smaller bands off to the side sometimes put on the better show. Sometimes you want to be off to the side and you want to see what's going on over there. Like last night, I can make the argument. The Dodgers and Padres put on a better show than the NFL doubleheader when they were playing back-to-back on the main stage. If you have not been paying attention, then maybe you did not know last night was, in fact, an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object. The unstoppable force now are the red-hot Slam Diego Padres. They welcomed the immovable object, the seven-time defending NL West champ, LA Dodgers, to Petco Park. San Diego riding an MLB best seven-game heater. The Dodgers holding on to a two-and-a-half-game lead in the division with their ace Clayton Kershaw on the bump. Kersh It's been nothing short of vintage this year. Maybe the velo's down a bit, but it doesn't matter because this dude has been spinning Uncle Chuck, slinging his slide piece to the tune of a sub-2 ERA, 5 wins, and a career-best whip. And for 5 innings last night, he mowed right through the NL's second-best lineup. Padres righty, Denelson Lamet, matched him the entire way, though. Halfway through that game, we were watching an old-school pitcher's duel that Kirsch was barely getting the better of. And then things went from somewhat respectful and cordial to extremely chippy with a single swing in the bottom of the sixth. Game was 1-0 at that point, Dodgers. And then Padres center fielder Trent Grisham finally got to Kershaw and tied it up with his moonshot.
In the air to deep right field for Grisham. It's gone, and the Padres tie it 1-1. One swing of the bat will get it done. Home run number 9 of the year for Grisham has tied this game off. Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, we got some chirping going on. Trent Grisham crushed this baseball, and he watched it. He was in the batter's box when that ball was struck. There was no doubt about it.
I'd say it's on.
All of that's true. All of that was true. Grisham did watch that baseball. I'll tell you who didn't. Clayton. He didn't even turn around. He knew. Biggest home run in the biggest Padres game in years. And my man styled it. Like he walked off the World Series in extra innings. That was a long stare, a half turn, a Joey Bautista-esque bat flip, some serious chirping and hand gesturing going around the bases. I mean, Grisham, maybe it's just me, but if I didn't know any better or any different, it seemed to me that he pretty clearly mother-effed the Dodgers dugout on his way around the bases. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm wrong. And if I am, I apologize. But I don't think I am. Check the tape. You don't have to be like Vin Scully, lip-reading expert, to know that he hit the boys in the blue with a massive MF bomb. And you know where I come out on this, right? I'm all about the new school flair. I'm not about the code. I hate the code as much as the code hates fun. Now, if I want to turn that on its head, if I want to, if I want to look at the other side, is it different because we're talking about Clayton Kershaw, the epitome of class? Is it different if we're talking about Clayton Kershaw and we're talking about Trent Grisham and Clayton Kershaw? I mean, you're Trent Grisham. He's Clayton Kershaw. Dave Roberts pretty much said as much after the game.
You know, I don't mind guys admiring a homer. You know, certainly it's a big game, big hit. Really like the player. But I just felt that to over kind of stay at home play, and certainly against a guy like Clayton, who's got the respect of everyone in the big leagues and what he's done in this game, I just took exception to that because I think that there's a certain respect that you give a guy that, you know, if you homer against him.
You know, so where are we going to draw the line here? Like, are there exceptions to the new rule? Like, if the code sucks, does the code just not suck for everybody? Or does the code suck for almost everybody, but there's still a line you don't want to cross when you deal with a really classy guy like Clayton Kershaw? Or does that not factor in at all? Or is there something to be said about the Dodgers thinking, hey, y'all, you do know you're the Padres, right? You do know you're the Padres. Or is there something to be said for the Padres thinking, the hell we are. Not anymore, we're not. We may have been, but not anymore, we're not. We came into this game, the hottest team in baseball, 2.5 back of you. The hell we are. So where do you come out on this? Like, do you agree, do you disagree with stunting on a classy future Hall of Famer who's going to go down as one of the best pitchers ever? The Dodgers didn't seem to like that, and the Padres loved it. You know, I can see where Dave Roberts has got his guys back. Because Dave Roberts, I don't care what any of you say, Dave Roberts is a great manager and a class act, and he had Clayton's back. But the Padres, I can also see where they just don't give a damn. Why would they, man? They're coming. They're coming for your heart. And the Dodgers, you know, they could not convert their hate into anything the rest of the way. The Padres, on the other hand, use that moment as fuel. They explode for 6 more, and they run away with that game 7-2. So where does that leave us? Right now, the Padres are an unthinkable 32-17. They're a game and a half back of the Dodgers. It was not that long ago. Earlier this season, as crazy as this season is, we were talking about the Dodgers being as good as they've ever been. The Dodgers being potentially an all-time great team. I mean, that good. And the Padres are a buck and a half out. They're a game and a half out. But let's be clear about this. Man, the swinging Friars, they don't give a damn. They're not afraid. They're not intimidated. They're loving it. Dodger broadcaster Earl Hershiser, I thought, put it really interestingly when he said, quote, "The Padres are playing for respect. The Dodgers are playing for reputation." There's something to that. I mean, the Dodgers, they got to get it done. They just have to get it done. Padres have a huge chip on their shoulder, and they are running on premium fuel. Everybody knows the NL West goes through LA. The Padres do not give a damn. They're a game and a half out, and they're trying to change it all right now. That's the first Padres 8-game winning streak in 8 seasons. The first time Kershaw has dropped the decision to San Diego in 7 years. In other words, everything has changed. Not only did the Padres get over last night, they literally MF'd the Dodgers in the process. So there's no doubt they're going to carry that into game 2 tonight. Here's how important these games are. At best, the Padres can finish that series with a half-game lead in the division. At worst, they're 3.5 back. Massive swing right there when you consider there are 8 games left. None of them are head-to-head with LA. So this means everything to both of those teams. Even if the Padres are ahead of schedule right now, they know the opportunity is right there. And you never know when you'll get it again. Regardless of what happens, man, we saw the birth of a legitimate rivalry. Like, San Diego hates LA, always has, always will. But it's one thing to hate them. It's another to be competitive with them. And they are. We've been waiting on this for a long time. Dodgers v. Padres, LA v. San Diego, reputation v. respect. Hell yeah. Bring it on. Let's play 2 more.
Yeah.
I love that last night. Loved it. From both sides. And I know if I put it to you, I'm going to get more calls from San Diego than LA. Padre fan, how you feeling about things right about now? We open up hour number 2. Open phones to start that hour. 1-800-636-8686. Do not go anywhere.